Hey Changemakers, what is going on? Jay Wong here. Let me ask you a couple questions. Are you looking to live big in your life? Meaning, are you looking to step into abundance and looking to figure out how to be able to take your coaching practice and be profitable doing what you love? Are you a coach that's listening or watching this and you're trying to figure out not just how to monetize your own practice, but how to be able to serve your own clients at the highest level? Look, I've been there with my own coaching practice, and if you're a listener of the show, you know we're all about living big. We're all about choosing and creating the legacy that we truly want. And the guest that we have for you today is someone really special. I'm super excited that we finally got a chance to do a collaboration, but he's a serial entrepreneur, global educator, consultant. In fact, you probably know him and some of the companies that he represents and actually co-founded. You probably heard of Mind Valley Teach or EverCoach or maybe the Global Grit Institute. Well, our guest today actually wrote the book called The Book of Coaching for Extraordinary Coaches. And he's here to chat with us on his newest book that recently just came out, I believe a week or two from the time of recording this. It's called Live Big. And it really walks you through how to be able to step into that life that you truly want, because it's a very practical guide for combining your passion and being able to live on purpose. And that's what we talk about in this interview, is how to not just be able to do goal setting, but how to actually keep going forward when times are tough, when you're having those bad days. And my guest is no other than Ajit Nawaka. And some of you know him already, but he comes from such an interesting story where he grew up in a very poor place called Jaipur in India. And he lived with 23 other people. Can you imagine what that was like, you know? And to move forward, to fast forward time, to now writing a book called Live Big, you know? And it's a guide to coaches, entrepreneurs, creators, to change makers out there, just like you, on how to be able to combine the passion, the profits, and also be able to live your life to the next level. So I really hope you enjoy this interview. We cover so many different topics. You're going to see me, you know, ferociously writing down notes. You should be doing the same thing, by the way, because we all know in our world today, content is not how you're going to win the game, right? It's about deploying all of that content into your own life. It's about the context of this. So anyways, I don't want to hold you back any further. I hope you guys enjoy this collaboration, this interview with my man, Ajit Nawaka. Here you go. Ajit, man, welcome to the show, brother. Really happy to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me, Jay. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. What a wall you have going there. I know you were telling me a little off record, but those are images from your book, right?
Yeah, those are actual images of chapters inside the book. So the book is written slightly differently than the usual books. It's as much as it is a book that you read and you learn from.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be an experience that you go through. So the book also covers a lot of visual cues, a lot of exercises, a lot of follow-up programs that we just give away for free, for you to be able to really take this learning and make it an experience and make it a transformative journey and not just something that you read and then you forget. So the idea was that. And so there's images and you get these images as a part of the book, you know, all that kind of good stuff.
It's cool. Well, you know, I'm a little upset. The copy I got did not have the images in there. But
yeah, you got the very early origin outfit. Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I do remember this one line. I was reading it over. I think it was like it wasn't even in the book. It was like in the intro where it said, "Live big." The name of the book is like life, right? And it says it doesn't. There's no sequence to it, right? Yeah. Even though, like I know you break it into three parts, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it in this conversation. Mm-hmm. But I love that you pointed that out because I think you're so right. You know, a lot of people, creators, entrepreneurs, people that are out there trying to figure things out, they have a piece figured and they're trying to get to the next one. Like, there isn't a sequence. So I love that you pointed that out even before diving into the book. I'm pretty sure it was in the intro.
Yeah, it was in the intro. And that's the way we want you to take the book in, because you see, there's a lot of us in entrepreneurship and in life as well. We think that we do A, B, C, D, and we'll get a particular outcome.
Yeah. But
as we live through life, we realize that's not true. Like, it's not A leads to B, B leads to C, C leads to D. It just doesn't work that way. There is no sequence of events that are guaranteed to give you a result. There is a sequence that is for you because you see it like a sequence because you went from year one to year two, but the activities that happened, they just happened in whatever order they wanted to happen. Like, there is nothing like, because a lot of time people go, oh, you build Facebook first and then do Instagram. Does it really? Like, you could build Instagram first if you want to. You could build YouTube first if you want to. You can build whatever you want. And that's kind of like, that's how life is like in business as well and in life as well. You can work on your health first, or you can work on your relationship first, or you can work on them together at the same time, right? It still works, and it's a choice that we make. And based on the choice that we make, we need the right training, the right education, the right transformation, the right guidance for us to be able to move that story further and live big's rhythm like that. That it is not, it doesn't lean on the previous chapter to really communicate with you what's important in the chapter that you're reading. Mm. And our intent is that as you flip through the book, you will find whatever is the right chapter for you. And it will show up for you, and you will be able to read it, and you will be able to fully grasp the perspective, the study around it, and the follow-up exercise around it.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me, and I had zero intentions of starting the conversation this way, but, you know, it's just flowing like it, right? And just kind of goes with your plan, which, you know, like as you're talking, I can kind of see this being one of those books, which is how a book is actually supposed to be used, which is a resource over time. Right. And I could see it like just being on your bookshelf, you pulling it out, flipping to, you know, almost like random. Right. But being able to take whatever that idea is and deploy it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would make such a bigger difference than reading, you know, all these people that are like, oh, I'm reading a book a week or book a month or whatever, you know, like I'm doing a course a week or, I mean, and sometimes that's more good than bad. But a lot of times because they're so inundated with content, they don't even go and deploy that one idea. So I love that you kind of just chunk down the whole book and you're giving them these actionable tips. So that's super cool.
Yeah, and the intent again is that it will be a book that just sits by your desk side at all times. And you just pick it up, and when you need growth in your business, you flip over to the pages and you see what is the idea that you need right now to grow your company. Yeah. Or if you're challenged in your business, you'll flip over to a page, and hopefully it'll give you the perspective to change the reality of that channel and create a new reality for you. So idea and intent is to be able to support you through the challenges, and also to be able to support you through your intention of growing your company and your organization.
Mm. I love that. I love that. This is going to be a good one. This is going to be a good one. I like it. I like it. So, okay, Ajit, you're a man with many talents. I mean, we heard from the intro, you're up to like everything. This is the second book, multi, CEO of multiple companies. You recently had a new baby in your life. So congratulations for that. Right.
Thank you. You
got this book coming out. It's amazing. And so I knew we were going to have this conversation, and all of those accolades, I mean, I think they're awesome. But one of the things that I found out about you that I thought was super cool, and I know it's maybe a bit of a weird place to start, but, I thought it was really cool because I found out that at one point you bought your parents a house.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, coming from your history, just coming from like where you grew up and like all the things that you've gone through, how did that feel for you?
Well, it felt amazing because that was my life goal, honestly. I achieved it several years ago at this point, but it was really something that I hoped to achieve when I was 40 or 50 years old.
Yeah.
Because I thought it would take that much time to really get to a place where I can buy a house for my family. And that was really, really gratifying, really grateful. I was really grateful to be able to do that. I was really happy to be able to see that was something that happened, and that my family was really surprised and amazed and grateful and everything about it. So family means a lot to me. Friendships mean a lot to me. So it was really, really powerful experience to have. To be able to do that, because again, also it was my life goal. So
when did you set that goal? Like, when did you, you know, write it down, or, you know, kind of mentally jot it down? You're like, you know what, one day I'm going to do that for my
parents.
I think
I wrote it down much later in life, but mentally, because I didn't have the practice of writing goals until later in life. I started only writing my goals when I was I want to say maybe 23, 24 years old. So yeah. About 10 years ago.
Okay.
But before that, I had intentions and I was always an intentional person. I always knew that was the one big idea that I want to chase, right?
Mm.
So the one big thing that I wanted to chase, and this is when I was maybe 13 or 14 years old, when I said the one thing that I would like to really achieve in life is to be able to buy a house for my family and for myself. It wasn't only for right. my parents, it was even for myself. I grew up in a household of 23 people. So we used to share space for a lot of people together, and which is why I was like, okay, I need to get, that's why that was my life goal. That's the whole backstory around it is, you know, when you're growing up with so many people around you, your biggest thing becomes, how do I not be around so many people at all times? I think that was the case for me. So
yeah.
So I went in with that as my big intention when I was younger, when I was in my teens. That was the big commitment. That was my ambition of life. And you know, when you fulfill the ambition of your life, you feel great. And 7 days later, you are lost again.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the challenge of goals. Is like the goals can be very gratifying when you achieve them, but they can also be they can also throw you off a little bit because you might go, oh, I got the goal, now what? Right. So it kind of confuses you as well. So that's the interesting part.
Growing up in a house, I mean, that's one of the most interesting things that, I mean, mm-hmm. I found looking into your story, but I'm curious, is that I found like that's maybe a more common thing in India,
mm-hmm.
right? Maybe not just in India, but yeah. like I grew up with, you know, my family, you know, immigrated to Canada, and like they used to mm-hmm. tell me these stories of my cousins and everybody living in just like a very, you know, like a 2-bedroom apartment, the whole family, extended mm-hmm. families there, right?
Yeah.
So did you find like growing up in that situation, is that, did you, you know, at those points, was that the inspiration for you to say, hey, I want to go and live big? Right? Like, I want to go and like have more, I want to be able to support these individuals. Did it start there, or was it as you kind of developed as
no,
a
much
business
later.
Owner? Yeah.
Much, much later. Yeah. The it started with, so I decided that I want to be able to create a life of choice much later in life. Like I said, my big intention was always make some money, buy a house. And that's all I really wanted to do for the great part of my life. And you're right. A lot of Asian countries and a lot of Asian realities, this is the truth, where yeah. you grow up in families, where your extended family stays with you. And that, for some people, it's great. For people like me, or at least especially for me, I don't have people like me, but for me, it was really hard. It was too much. It was too many people, too many energies, too much happening in the house at all times. And I'm an introvert in the sense like I like my own space. I like my own time.
Mm.
And there is no introversion that is allowed or is possible in a reality like that. So it was hard for me when I grew up.
Yeah.
But at the same point in time, a lot of people grow up like that. Not everybody makes a decision to say they want to change their lives. I just happen to be a person who did. So that's where that comes from. And that's where that kind of changed the direction and trajectory of what I would do in life from there on. I would make certain decisions that otherwise were not common or acceptable
sure.
in the truth of how Indians operate, or at least my community was operating at the time.
Yeah.
And so it was an uncharted territory. It was something that people were like, holy shit, what is this guy doing?
Yeah.
And it seems all wrong until it became right, of course.
You know, that's the thing. And even like, as I'm talking to you right now, like I resonate, even when I was researching you, I was like, I resonate so much with your story because I, you know, and I think so many people that are listening to this, that they, you know, their parents have or their teachers or the, you know, people they grew up with, they have a certain version of like what's right for them, right? Whether it's like a cultural thing or whether it's, you know, like we're in our family, we do this. And then that person wants to go out and they want to create, or they want to be an entrepreneur, or they want to be a coach, or they want to write books, and they want to be, you know, they want to like do different things than what their family's accustomed to. So I think your story resonates with so many different people. But I'm curious, like what did you want to be when you were little? Like, do you remember? Like,
when I was really young, I don't remember what I wanted to be.
Okay.
But from the time that I had consciousness, awareness of what we should be, our answer was always to be an engineer. And that was driven purely, nothing to do with ambition. It was purely driven by the quality of life in context of financial quality and wealth, right? Because in India, you are either expected to be an engineer, doctor, accountant, or nothing.
Right.
Entrepreneurship wasn't a thing in India at that time.
I hear you.
We didn't. And it's probably similar in your culture as well, that you have to be these certain qualifications. And if you're not those qualifications, then I'm sorry, like you're kind of like the black sheep of the family, right?
Right.
Just because you're not studious or whatever that is, right? So that was the truth about my younger self, like my childhood. I was always being trained to be somewhat of engineering was kind of like the pick usually, because I wasn't an A student ever, but I wasn't a C student either. So I was kind of like average as a student. Like B plus type of student, and so because of that, it was like, okay, so this guy can, if he really tries, he can be an engineer. Only later in life I would realize that yes, I can be an engineer. I totally would have qualified, and I could have made it to an engineering school and become an engineer. I would have just been really bad at it and wouldn't find any joy in it. So it became kind of pointless because of that for me to pursue it further.
Yeah,
and that's where the direction changed, but. But as young, really child age, I don't think I had a particular ambition. I whatever playtime it would mean. Right. I definitely loved, and I've always loved films. So I was always very excited about filmmaking and production and so forth. And eventually, as I grew up, I found that what I was really, really excited about mostly was writing and telling stories. And which is why I write books now.
Now you write books.
I write books. And my books are very easy to read. They're written in a way where they're short sentences, easy to read, easy to capture, easy to reflect on, and are based on stories. And based on stories, not just my stories, but stories from the world. And that was something that I definitely realized later as I was growing older. That was the conflict between will I end up being an engineer, or will I end up being something else because I actually like it versus what's right, right? Engineering was the right thing to do, and telling stories was good to me and good to my soul in a way.
Mm.
So eventually I ended up with stories, but that was for a good number of years. It was the wrong decision I had made according to my family and friends.
Yeah.
Even till now, a lot of my family and friends think that what the heck do I do and why don't I just stick to and then becoming an engineer or something like that. It's funny.
You know, those books or happened. Those videos you put up, Ajit, like, I don't know, you know, if they pay the bills or anything, but that engineering degree, it's so funny because, I had a couple years ago, well, I've been having this podcast for the last, 3 years or so, but sometime around at the end of year one, year one of any business, it's just like, it's a bit of a train wreck, to be honest. It's just chaos. Everything's constantly on fire.
First 2 years for that matter.
Yeah, first 2 years. And, the show, I started the show a little after, like, I began. And, long story short, I interviewed someone, like, in Toronto, where I'm typically based out of, and it's hometown. And that person ended up, long story short, they ended up giving me a billboard. They actually owned, they ran this media company. They owned like one of these billboards in like kind of like a very popular intersection, almost like the Times Square of Canada, like Times Square of Toronto. In Dundas Square, we just had it was like a 15 second billboard, and it would run every like 3 minutes. And they just gave it to me for like 5 days. Right. And it was like, they were like, we reserve 20% of the spots for like charities, and I know you're not a charity, but like let me help you, right? And it's like, mm-hmm. when you're starting out, you're like, yes, like I'll take any help, right? And I remember I brought my parents there to see the billboard, and it was promoting the podcast, it was promoting some of the interviews, it was promoting the theme, which was choosing legacy over currency, which is like, it sounds very nice, mm-hmm. but my parents were like, they looked at the billboard and they're like, oh, okay, like that's cool, like we took a few photos. And like, I'm pretty sure till this day, like they don't, it's not, I don't take offense to it, but like they don't know how to listen to the podcast. You know what I mean? They still don't really understand like, how did he get that billboard? And like, why was it there? And like, what's the whole idea behind it? Right. So It's just funny, but that was a cool moment.
Have to be okay with that. It's the same case with my parents. It's like they don't really get what I do. They're just like, okay, it seems like you can afford the house that you can afford and some more other stuff that sounds really nice and looks really good.
Yeah.
We don't really know what you do and we don't really know how it really works out, but hey, whatever floats the boat at this point, right?
So, okay, how does someone that grew up in a house of, you know, 22 other people, wanted to, you know, pursue engineering, but like, not just because you pursued, but you felt like you had to. I think a lot of people watching and listening to this, like, they feel certain obligations in their life, right? Like, I have to have a certain job, or I got to go to a certain school, or I got to do whatever, like a certain thing, because my family's done it, or it's tradition, or it's our legacy, right? In some way, shape, or form. So how did you go from like thinking, like coming from that world to where you are now? I mean, we don't need like the step by step play, but like what was some of the big mindset shifts do you remember? Because I know there's a million different things that obviously happened, right?
Yeah.
You know, if someone's watching this, listening, they're in that constricted, confined zone. How can they start thinking and realizing, oh, okay, like I have some gifts over here, or I can go in this direction?
So firstly, I would say there are many things that happen, and it'll be really hard to summarize because life is a journey and there's a lot of perspectives that you need to shift. And I feel it's more about the perspective than any strategy that really makes a wonderful life or a life of choice. And that was the first shift that happened for me. So I always used to think, and this is like my teenage years, I always used to think that the only way to get successful was to become an engineer, right? Because that's the dialogue, or that was the dialogue in India, right? Become an engineer, become a doctor, all that stuff. So for me, that was it. That's how you become successful. The first shift that ever happened for me was one of my teachers. This is the vice principal of the school and an English teacher in the school. And one day I was doing the morning news, you know, like as kids do sometimes, the morning news, this morning prayer or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was doing the morning news and I would do it once in a while. And I was doing the morning news and she stepped back and said, "Yeah, you're really good. If you choose to be, you can be a news anchor." And that was, she was just being kind and nice, right? But that was something that stayed with me for a bit, because she didn't only say it once. She said it like two or three times. Every single time I would do the news, she would say something to that tune. And that kind of stayed with me. And that one perspective of saying you can choose to be blank, you can choose to be blank, whatever you want to be, type of is how I replaced it, instead of saying you can choose to be a news anchor if you want to be. So I kind of, that is where my first shift happened, where I was like, hey, listen, I could be whatever I want to be. And I don't have to stick to this path.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to like stay on this course. That was the first big shift. And I would invite us to know that it seems impossible from the reality that we are looking at right now. Like in my reality at that time, as a 14, 15 year old, there was no way I could be a news anchor or anything beyond an engineer. Like being in the public eye itself was an impossible thing at that point, right? And so at that point, it seemed impossible. But well, if you look at it 20 years later, I am in the public eye in a different regard. I'm not a news anchor or anything like that, but I did whatever I wanted to do. So that's something that we tend to ignore, tend to not really believe, that we can choose to be whatever we want to be, and we tend to not really pursue. But that was a big one for me. That changed the trajectory of how I operated at a really young age. Then the second one would be around goals and being able to write goals and writing a plan for it.
Yeah,
that was a big transformative thing for me, because I used to think about things that I would want in my life, but I never really wrote it down. I realized the power of writing goals, and not just writing goals, but writing how to tackle it, which I think is the big difference between writing goals versus actually achieving goals.
Right.
Writing goals, people write goals and then they forget about it, right? Because this is an annual exercise.
Yeah.
Oh, it's December. Let me write my next year goals, right? But it's cool. I mean, it's at least better than not doing anything and getting drunk at a party.
Right.
It's better than that. But if you really want to achieve your goals, is not only write the goals, but write down how you will tackle it and actually make a plan for it. And it doesn't have to be a foolproof plan or anything like that. It doesn't have to be the right plan. It just needs to be a plan. Because what happens is when you write down a goal and you write a plan for it, your mind starts to go, okay, how do I achieve my goal? And it has to put that plan together, right? So it has to come up with ideas that can lead them towards the direction of achieving that goal. And when that happens, you start to take action towards it because now you have a plan. If you just have a big goal and it feels overwhelming, what happens? We shut down as people, right? And you don't want to shut down. So you, what you want to do is you want to be able to make progress on a daily basis for that goal to really become a truth in, say, a year from now or 5 years from now. Which leads me to the third big perspective about goals is that don't have goals that are year long. That's one of the big mistakes that we make about goal setting is we set goals that are only about a year long. And when we set a year long goal, you know what happens? When we have a year long goal, we create a tremendous amount of anxiety around it. Because here is what happens. When you set a year-long goal, usually you put a goal that is obnoxious. Like a goal like saying, oh, let's say you've not even started a business. You say, I will build a $1 million business in the next 12 months. It's an obnoxious goal. If you don't even have, if you haven't even started, you're not going to hit a million unless you have some huge backing and everything. And I'm not trying to subject to that. I'm just saying simply from the perspective of saying, hey, if you're starting a business, it takes years before you can build it to a million and then further. Right. So if you're starting a business, don't try to hit $1 million in the first year and don't put that as a goal because that will get create anxiety 2 months in, right? Don't put a goal that is so big. Like, you know, there often I work with, sometimes I work with businesses and clients and sometimes clients will come into our intensives, which we do for clarity and acceleration of the businesses. They would come into the intensive and they all come up with the plan of saying, yeah, next year I'll launch these 6 products and two media channels and this and that. And I'm like, hey, listen, hold on. Why do you need to hit 6 new products? And then they go, well, because my yearly goal is X, Y, and Z. I'm like, if you want to grow your company by 100% next year, you don't need 6 new products, right? You need 1 or 2 more products. That's all you really need. And then we do the math and they go, yeah, that's your right. We don't really need to build out 6 products. And like, if you put 6 products in the queue in the next 12 months, the two things that will happen. Either you'll get really anxious about it and after 3 months you'll say, fuck it. Right. Or what will happen is you'll create 6 really bad products. Right. Which also doesn't serve the purpose. Right. So you will end up doing the 6 products, but they will be terrible. So why create the 6 new products, which are just absolutely terrible, doesn't serve any purpose, doesn't create a client for long-term success of your company and your business? Why do it? Why waste your time? Why waste people's time? Let's build solid products that will actually generate the revenue as well. So create 2 products, right? So that's kind of the reason why we put a 5-year goal is because in 5 years, you can make 6 really good products. Yes, let's make 6 products, but let's take 5 years for it, 3 years for it. And here's one thing that I found. If you put a 5-year goal, most likely you will hit that goal in 3 years, right? But if you put a year-long goal, you'll probably give up on it, right? That's and I'm not saying it's true for everyone, but it's true for a lot of us. If you put a 5-year goal, you will hit it in 3 years. If you put a 1-year goal, you will probably give up on it in the first 3 months or 4 months of the year because you will just get frustrated with everything that's happening, especially if you're not careful about how you've set it up as a goal.
I used to work with a company called Strategic Coach with Dan Sullivan, and he had the saying, which was like, no goals are like goals. It doesn't matter how big the goal is. It's not unrealistic. There's only unrealistic timelines. Right. And I was like, man, that's really true. So that's interesting. One of the things that you pointed out that I don't think a lot of people have brought up, which is like writing down goals. I've talked to multiple people and enough individuals, everybody like, okay, when you're stuck, write down your goals, right? Like get yourself focused. Like it makes sense. But how often, like when you were kind of like coming up, when you were, you know, in the mix and, you know, before the 2 books, before the CEO of every other company, right? Like, you know, how often would you write down your goals and write down the plan?
So I would write down, there was no, I didn't have like a fixed pattern. It wasn't like, every 15 days I should write it, every week I should write it, every month I should write it. But I would write it frequently. So it would be very often that I would revisit my goals. I would not only write them down, but what was more important to me was writing down a plan for it.
Yeah.
Right. So again, sometimes what will happen is I'm not writing down the whole list because if I write, if you look at the back of my journal, you will see about 50 things that I want to do over the course of the next 5 or 10 years. Right. Sure. It's kind of, I don't really put a timeline to my goals. I just say these are the things I would love to experience or do and so forth or create. Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of them get manifest much, much earlier because if they're, especially if they're experiences like bungee jump or something, that is just like go and book a
right. It's just about the right thing, right time.
Yeah, it's more like saying, hey, if it's in Australia, then well, book a travel to Australia and then go do it there. Mm-hmm. Right. So those are easy to schedule, so they get done much faster. But things like, for example, I want to build a $50 million company. Well, that I don't want to put a timeline to it because I don't want to be stressed out about building the company. I want to have fun doing it. That's why that's my goal.
Yeah.
So what I would do is, if let's say I wrote down, I want to build a $50 million company just for the kicks of it, right? What I would write down is how do I take one of my companies to 50 million?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I might do several iterations of that instead of doing the whole sheet of goals, right? Mm-hmm. So I might not rewrite all my goals, all 50 of them, say 50 times a year, but I might end up doing those goals maybe a couple of times a year. But what I might do is I might pick out one of that's a more complicated goal or more complicated to achieve goal. And it's not only about money. Money is the easy one to explain. And because most people have top of mind only money, but even if you think about relationship, let's say if you want to build a solid 10-person friendship group that you can hang out with and be really vulnerable with and really talk about your challenges and so forth, you need a strategy for it. It's not that you say, okay, today I'll be vulnerable with people and you show up. No, there needs to be value alignment with the people. They need to understand you're being vulnerable. They need to be open to that idea themselves to be able to reflect back and be vulnerable with you if that's the goal, right? So whatever that is, everything needs a playbook, some sort of a playbook. Health needs a playbook. You can't just say, okay, I'll be healthy. No, that doesn't work. You need a plan. You need a trainer. You need a food schedule or somebody who comes cooks for you. Or if you're going to cook, you've got to figure out what are those 20 menu items so you don't mess around and buy the pizza next day because you're like, hey, I don't have the time to cook. Well, you got to come up with a recipe booklet for it. So you know, okay, these are 20 meals that I eat and you just make them every single time. And it's 20 meals. So you're not bored because no meal repeats itself until the next 10 days, which is good enough time for you to not feel bored about that meal again, right? So everything can be put into a plan and a way that you can go, okay, now I can actually follow it, right? Mm. So every part of your life is planable like that. You just have to see, do you want to focus it or not? And if you will plan it, there's more likelihood that you will actually do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of my past guests. You might know Craig Ballantyne. He's coming out.
Yeah,
with a book.
I just got introduced to him. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's coming out with a book in a few weeks, or in January it might be. But he was the guy who told me, like, he was like episode 60 something, like this is like way back, right? And he said, Jay, with greater structure comes greater freedom, right?
Oh yeah, hell
and,
yeah.
And at that
freedom
time,
is structure.
Yeah, and at that time,
I talk about it in the book as well. I talk about it. There's a chapter called "This Is Freedom."
Yeah,
and that actually explores that idea on why structure is actually freedom.
Mm. Well, it's super true because I remember when I was at that stage. And it was very much like 4-hour work week, kind of like inspired, like, hey, I thought I'd just get this whole thing running and then I can go to, you know, the beach somewhere. Right? I'm not even like a beach person, but it's like that's what's on the cover. So like that's what I'm chasing, you know, but everything, you know, when you're doing that, everything is there is no systems, right? Especially in, you know, those first couple of years. So I remember that when he said that, that made a huge difference in just the way I would think. And I love that you broke that down because it's so right. Like, you know, being successful in one area of your life, like those are clues and you can take that and apply that to multiple areas of your life, whether you want to build relationships, friendships, you know, get your 6-pack abs or build the 6-7-figure business. Like, you know, it's all the same ideas. And I love that you bring that up too with Live Big, you know, because there's a structure behind how to live big. It's not just like, hey, I want to live big. I want to live, you know, in abundance. You know, I'm going to manifest it just by, you know, saying it out loud or writing it down, right? So I love that you integrate that.
Yeah, and structure is important, but also understand that all structure, you create structure because structure creates the freedom. So even if the book gives you ideas on how to really live big, it's a structure to create the freedom, right? So that also means that there will be areas that will not have structure in your life. Mm. And that's okay if those areas don't have structure in your life because that's absolutely fine. And let's stay with it that way so we can continue to explore what is new and unavailable and unseen to us when we are creating that structure, right? So there might be a lot of things that you will learn and there will be a lot of things in life that you will learn beyond what you already know today, right? So you need to have the freedom and the flow for that to be incorporated in your life.
Yeah, love it. Love it. And for everybody watching and listening, we're going to link to the book down below, as well as, you know, all of Ajit's information. You guys got to go check him out. I was telling him I was watching all these videos before we were hopping on here, trying to get myself educated. You got some amazing testimonials, by the way. Lisa Nichols, really popular guest that was on the show. Like, our interview is probably like top two or three from the show. I don't know, though. Lisa, we're going to put up this interview. Yeah, Lisa's got that. It made me remember that I know that this was in your first book, right? You actually wrote a book called The Book of Coaching, right? And you also run EverCoach. And, you know, I feel if I didn't ask this, I feel like I'd kind of kick myself. But, like, knowing all of this in terms of goal setting, structure, like having that freedom, you know, as of right now, we all know that there's a lot of people, and especially in the last few years, right, that just entered into the expert space, myself included, right, really in the last few years. And, you know, they started coaching and you know, some are a little more niche, some are maybe business coach or life coach or what have you. You've seen so many coaches, like you've interacted with probably hundreds and thousands of these coaches. What are you finding that coaches nowadays, like, what are they missing? Like, why aren't they going to that next level? And a lot of cases, they're burning out or they're ending up broke. So what's going on with these coaches?
So there are two or three factors. It's not just one. So it depends on the coach we're speaking with. So firstly, most of the coaches are not really finding the success because they don't have a real methodology. They don't have a way to actually create change. So what happens is that a lot of coaches get into this field because they think they've had a transformative experience in life and they're going to help other people have that transformative experience in life. But if there is no way that you can consistently create that transformative experience, there is no way that people will constantly work with you, right? You need to create consistent results for people. You can't be flowy about it. You can have some elements of flow with it. Because you will be working with different people, and so you need to have that flexibility. But most of your coaching needs to have some sort of structure around it so you can create a persistent set of results for people. And you don't mess around with it too much. You test it, you build it, and once it's built, you go for it, right? So that's the one thing that one needs to understand. Second, you need to understand that it's still a business, right? People think they can just freelance their way through coaching. That doesn't happen. It is still a business, which means you need to know how to enroll a client, how to bill people correctly, how to package your products, how to really create a sales conversation that creates enrollment. What's your content playbook? Or if you're not doing content playbook, what's your event strategy? You need to have a playbook for your business to be able to expand. A lot of coaches think just putting out content videos, they will get clients. Doesn't work, right? You got to know what's your playbook. Everybody's playbook is different. My coaching practice is exclusively based on events and networking that I do with people. My coaching practice, the thing where I actually coach clients. I don't try to get them from my content. That's EverCoach. That's a training business. That's actually not a coaching business. That's a training business for coaches. If you really understand, like, you know, there are programs, there are quests. You can go and do those programs and that will allow you to elevate your practice. And those are the things that those several of the programs are you need to be able to elevate your practice. That's business training for coaches in a way. But it's the business training for coaches, not business coaching for coaches, right? So you see the differential. And lastly is, who are you coaching? So if you will see, the noise of coaching and the challenge of coaching is mostly in the world where you're trying to do personal coaching only, right? Personal coaching is, I am a life coach and all I do is I coach on life, right? When you coach on life, you're so generic that you become... it's harder for you to pull in and get a client because a client comes in and goes, okay, I want to be coached on life. It's like, what is life?
Which area?
Which area am I focused on, right? And because of that, what happens is coaches go, or clients go, okay, you coach on life. But there's a very small segment of clients that want entire life to be coached by one person. Usually, think about it like this. Why do we want to buy a program? Why do you want to hire a coach? There's usually going to be an ambition that needs to be fulfilled or a problem that needs to be solved, right? These are the only two reasons why they want a coach. They don't want a coach because they want to have a coach. There is no, they don't win if they have a coach. They win if they can get a result from the coach, right? It's like, it's not rocket science that I'm talking about. But what happens is we neither focus on what's the challenge that we are solving or the ambition that we are helping achieve, right? So know the ambition that you're going to help achieve and peak it with your clients. So think about it like this. Life goes like this, right? Mm-hmm. It goes up and down, up and down, up and down, right? When life's going up and down, up and down, up and down, what a client is looking for is either you peak me and take me up higher, or you take me to the depths of that problem and solve it for me so I can peak again, right? Mm. Nobody wants to stay at the depth of the problem too.
Right.
Your job as a coach, or what I feel most coaches don't do, is they don't either peak you when they are having a conversation with you and they want to enroll you, or dip you when they are having a conversation with you.
Mm.
They try to lean in into that safe zone, right? Because they're too scared to go either deep, or they're too scared to actually be able to show what's the potential of the person, right? You want to be able to show either of those, and not just be able to show that when you're enrolling, but actually get a result further. Because whatever you will peak them on, or wherever you will take them deep, they are going to want more of that when they sign up with you. And that comes back to my first point, that you don't have a solid product, right? Mm. And if you have a solid product, people want to come back to you because they're like, damn, whatever I did there, I want more of, because I know I got an X result or Y result. And know that sometimes whatever you think will work doesn't actually work. And that's okay too, because that's how you build a coaching practice or your methodology. Because you will try something and it'll be like, oh, I don't like it. People will go, oh, I don't like this, or this is not what I really wanted. And that's okay. You go, okay, fine. So that seems like this is not a product that will work, and you tweak the product and you find a new product for within that ecosystem. But you got to be experimental with that, and you got to keep finding stuff like that in there. So those are common things that I found. Again, I can't generalize for the entire industry because it depends.
Yeah.
But just to end on a positive note here, these might be the challenges, but coaching industry has peaked over $1 billion in sales this year, right? So that's a report by marketresearch.com. It's not me saying it.
Yeah.
They've researched executive coaches and coaches generally, and they found that it's over $1 billion in sales that happened in 2018 for coaches. The industry is that big, which means that there is potential for a lot more coaches than we actually have. The challenge is that the coaches that we have are not making the effort or concentrated effort to really understand where is this money flowing. A lot of this money is flowing to companies and corporations. And if you are able to drive results for companies and corporations, you will win. Yeah. A lot of this money is going towards people who don't really need therapy, but have challenges in life. Mm. So also, this is one more thing. A lot of coaches lean into therapy. You're not a therapist. Don't try to give therapy to people. When you're a coach, you're almost exclusively trying to get greater performance out of the person. Almost always, that's really what you're trying to get to. You're not trying to heal their childhood trauma. You might address it a little bit, but if it's really painful, you probably should send your client to a therapist, not try to solve it. Again, I think I went all over, but you're talking about coaching, that's a full episode. You can talk for 3 hours.
I was gonna say maybe we'll let you go through the book tour. We'll maybe have to do a round two here, because you're so spot on though, because part of my business is we help entrepreneurs be able to launch their own show, their own top 100 podcasts. And recently we started helping businesses this past year in terms of being able to do that. And the first thing we always talk about is who, right? Like, who are you building this for? Who are you serving? Who do you want to make a difference for? And then I love the point that you said, treating it like a business. I think people get a little confused. It's like, oh, it's social media. So they think it's not, you're right, like they see it as like but I'm like, everything, like you have to treat it like a business so that you have the metrics to measure. Anyways, like I think you're super super spot on. This is the guy. If you need to get deeper into coaching, if you need to get deeper into living big, Ajit is your guy. And I have a last couple questions here, I know, just before we wrap up. You know, the theme of the show is the idea of people choosing legacy, right? Choosing legacy over currency. This might be a little personal, but I'm always curious. How do you see the work that you're doing right now with the books, the companies? I mean, you and your wife are actually doing amazing work, you know, both like in the topics of grit, coaching, all of this. How do you see this building up the legacy that you guys want to leave behind?
So I am not a very legacy type of person. Like, I don't care if people remember me once I'm gone. What I do want to do, so there's a difference between that I see when we use the word legacy versus just a vision. I am a visionary person. I have a vision for my life. I have a vision for what I want to create, but I'm not attached to if people will accept it or not. Mm. Right? I'm not attached to if people go, oh, that was its legacy. I don't care. I want to flow through life how life is, which is beautiful and amazing. And I have a vision of the future, which allows me to be able to work on ideas that I think are positive for the society, are ideas that are positive first in the sense that they move the society towards a positive direction, and they allow us to be able to create transformative change and allow us for us to have a greater Earth, planet Earth as possible. And that's really my intent. And that's really my long-term goals, to be able to empower people to live the greatest version of their lives while helping others in the process to live through my values, which is love and service. And that's really what I intend to do. And it breaks down into goals, 5-year, 10-year goals. But generally, my direction is towards to be able to create something that's positive and powerful and helpful and useful to the world.
Yeah. And you're doing that. I mean, just, you know, knowing the companies that you're a part of, that you're leading, you know, I think you're doing such a good job of that. Where can people get the book? Right.
So by the time
they watch this, it's gonna be out, or it's about to be out for sure.
Yeah. So it's available at your nearest bookstores and so forth, but you can also go order it online right now. It's on livebigthebook.com. Livebigthebook.com. LiveBigTheBook, livebigthebook.com. As you go on there, you'll find multiple options to be able to order a copy for yourself.
Awesome. Ajit, last question. Name of the show, Inner Changemaker. When you think of the word changemaker, what comes to mind for you?
Somebody who lives through the place of service. That's what I would think is a changemaker. Somebody who wants to be of service to the humanity and for other human beings on this planet, and not just human beings, for the earth itself, for nature, for animals, for everything.
Yeah. Well, Ajit, like I said, you're a living, breathing example of someone who's living big, someone who's making a massive difference for people around them, for being a great change maker. That's why it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Want to acknowledge you, want to celebrate you. And, you know, if you're watching this, listening to this, go pick up a copy of Live Big. You can go get some of those cool photos that I'm missing in my book. Maybe I'm going to have to get a copy as well. And Ajit, we're going to have to do a round 2 on coaching. We're going to work that out somehow, because that was
awesome. Absolutely, Jack.
I appreciate you coming on, man.
Cool. Thank you, Jack. Take care. Bye.